Welcome. It's Karen Conti in for Brian Noonan. Brian is, I don't know where Brian is. Brian is taking the night off to watch a penumbral eclipse, or maybe he's shopping for his wife for Valentine's Day. I just made those two things up. I don't know what he's doing. But I'll be here for an hour, and we're going to be talking legal news, and we're going to be taking your legal questions. What I think I'm going to do is, as we all know, for the last week, we've been hearing about the Ninth Circuit and the executive order and the travel ban. And I don't really want to go through all of it necessarily from a political standpoint, because what I think I can bring to the table a little bit is the legal analysis. And I have heard and watched some of the analysis, and I'm not sure that I agree with everything that's being said about the significance of the Ninth Circuit opinion and what this is going to mean in the long run. So I'm going to give it my spin, my legal spin, and I'm welcoming anybody who wants to call in and ask me a question about what's going on in the Donald Trump administration from a legal standpoint and weigh in, if you will. And the number here is 981-7200. You can text to 312-981-7200. And, of course, feel free to call and text with any legal question you might have, as we always do for this hour during the Brian Noonan Show. Any topics you might have. If you've got criminal issues, maybe Valentine's Day is coming up and you're thinking about a prenuptial agreement, labor and employment issues, breach of contract, anything that is coming your way legally and you have a question, I'll be happy to answer it. Again, 981-7200. Well, yes, we've had a very busy week from a legal standpoint. As we all know, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the stay of President Trump's travel ban. And I guess I'd just like to weigh in a little bit on whether or not this is a significant advent, or is this something that was expected, and does it have any real lasting precedential value and precedential impact in the long run when it comes to this travel ban? And the first thing I want to say is that we're really at the preliminary stages. You know, the executive order was issued. There was an immediate filing of lawsuits all over the country to try to put a hold on it. And we call that an injunction. And at the injunction stage, you try to get everything stayed, meaning nothing gets enforced for a while. And you have to prove to the court that you have a likelihood of actually winning the case, meaning that you have a likelihood of showing that the law is unconstitutional. That was done at the trial level in the federal court in Seattle, and the case went up to the Ninth Circuit, which is the appeal court that goes right above that court. The next step would be the U.S. Supreme Court. So a panel of three judges listened to the arguments, and you may have listened to some of them. I don't know how interesting they were to the average person. There was some fumbling a little bit by the government's attorneys. I understand that he kind of filled in at the last minute for somebody else and therefore may not have been completely prepared for some of the questions. But be that as it may, it was a nerve-wracking argument. I would be sure to say that this was being listened to by millions of people. But the bottom line is the Ninth Circuit said, listen, you know, we're not ruling on whether it's constitutional, but we think just from looking at it from a preliminary standpoint, we agree that the president and the government is going to have a really hard time showing that this is constitutional. And we have some good arguments from the states that this law is, in fact, unconstitutional. And one of the things they really hung their hat on is the Due Process Clause. And the Due Process Clause, from your civic studies, as you recall, simply means that before the government takes any rights away from you, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, right? Before they do that, they have to give you notice, which means they got to give you a heads up, right? Then they have to give you an opportunity to be heard and a hearing and some process in order to have some right taken away. And because this executive order not only applied to refugees who have no rights at all, it did apply to some people who were here legally in this country and who, in fact, have significant legal rights. So that law didn't apply any due process. It didn't say we're going to give these people hearings, we're going to give people trials, we're going to give people a notice that they're going to be deported. In fact, it basically just allows the government to get them out of the country summarily. And the court said clearly that's against due process. And I think, you know, that down the line, the state is going to be able to prove that. The other interesting issue was the issue of whether or not this ban actually violates the First Amendment Establishment Clause. That's the one that says you can't establish a religion, you can't favor a religion if you're a government entity. Well, the court didn't really make a ruling on that. And that's been misinterpreted, I think, by the media. The court said, listen, we don't have enough. We don't really have to go there. The due process argument is enough. We're concerned that this is a discriminatory executive order. We heard what the administration said about it. We heard that this was really a Muslim ban, which is what they wanted to do originally, but now they're calling it a territorial ban. We heard that there are comments made by President Trump saying we're going to go easy on the Christians and maybe not so much on the other religions. So, again, people have asked, well, what harm is that? Why shouldn't Donald Trump get to say why he passed this law? Why can't he go on and say, yeah, it's a Muslim ban? Why can't he say, yes, we're going to give Christians a break coming from some of these countries? And why would that matter legally? That's just him talking. Well, interestingly, to prove discrimination, as in any kind of discrimination, whether that's in the workforce or anywhere else, you have to show intent, and that's really hard. How do you show what somebody intended unless they say it, right? You hardly ever have someone firing you and saying, I'm firing you because you're a woman, or I'm firing you because you're African-American. You have to take everything in context, and you have to see what prior comments have been made. And those comments by Donald Trump would definitely be used against him in interpreting whether or not he intended to discriminate against certain religions. So although the court didn't hang its hat on that issue, that's what's coming down the pike, I'm quite sure. So that said, I think the court really did a good job of also talking about the great broad discretion that the president has. And that's one of the things that we should come out of this with. When it comes to national security, when it comes to issues of immigration, and when it comes to safety and terrorism and things like that, protecting the country is the president's job. And the president has broad discretion to do it. And usually the Supreme Court and the higher courts don't really strike down much of anything because of that broad discretion. But there are some very serious limitations, due process, First Amendment, and things like that, that the president, in my view, probably should have been better prepared for. He probably should have drafted this with his legal counsel in a way that anticipated this kind of challenge. As we know, when we see legislators deliberate, and they're always and they're constantly thinking about legal ramifications. I was involved in the rewriting of the family law in Illinois, so I have some personal experience with this. At every given step of the way, we were very concerned about legal challenges and the expense of those and how that kind of causes turmoil among people when we have appeals of things saying this is unconstitutional or it's violation of some constitutional provision. So it seems to me that Donald Trump, and this is something that I said even before it was bantered about this weekend, Donald Trump, if I were his lawyer, would say, Donald, you want to do this, remove the executive order, withdraw it, whatever the technical term is, and let's draft a new one. And let's draft a new one that complies with the law, that gets rid of these arguments, that parses out the people who are here legally and the people who are here illegally because they should have different rights. And let's do this the correct way. Let's do it with the branches ready to enforce them uniformly. And let's do it in a way that doesn't affect people adversely and make people disrespect the law, because we all want to respect the law. And we all want to say that if the president says something, we may not agree with his reasoning or agree with the effect, but we know that what he did followed the letter of the law. And that's very, very, very important. So really, that's my view. I think we have a comment from John. Hi, John in Chicago. Welcome to WGN. Do you have a comment about this?
Yeah, I just have a question. Sure. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, was offered by, he said it was, his action is unconstitutional, or there are those that say such. Now, simply my question is, in order to be offered your constitutional rights and so on, don't you have to be a citizen of the United States?
You know,
if you're a Syrian immigrant, do you automatically have America's constitutional rights just because they exist?
You know, John, that's an interesting question, because most people would probably think, no, if you're not a citizen, what rights do you have? To the contrary, and this ruling, if you actually pull it up online and you get to the part where they discuss whether or not there is due process, there's a great discussion about who has constitutional rights. And, of course, people who are here legally do, right? People who are here on student visas, clearly you can't just deport them. And this law affected those people. So as to them, yes, legal rights.
Well, I saw Trump on TV today, and he made it pretty clear that everyone wants to say, oh, no, it's all of them, every one of them. And he is focusing on particular groups of such. Isn't that true?
He says he is, but when you look at the law, it focuses on, it's broad. It's much broader than you would think. It's not just people coming here as refugees. It's people who have certified documentation, having been here, having visited here, being on business, being on here on student visas. So he's got to call it out. He's got to figure out a way to get those people due process. If he wants to throw them back to their country, he's got to give them some rights. Or maybe he's just going to exclude them and focus on the people coming in from refugee countries.
I tell you, truthfully, I voted for Trump, and I would think in a lot of ways he'd be smarter about his approach to this stuff.
I feel the same way, but maybe it's who he's surrounding himself with, and I guess I think that way. He's not a lawyer. Okay, you don't have to be a lawyer to be president. We have plenty of that. But,
why don't you be president? You'd be a good president.
That's so nice. I would never, ever, ever do that. And subject myself to...
Basically, my question was...
Yes.
You don't... If you're a citizen or not, you get your constitutional rights in America just because this is the great America, right?
Yeah, you do. Even illegal...
Well, that's not really such a good thing, is it?
If it isn't... You know, I'm not going to comment on it, but if you look at the law and you really analyze it, the Supreme Court, which is a pretty conservative bunch of guys up there for most of the years that those decisions were coming down, basically said, yeah, we have, those people have constitutional rights, even illegal immigrants. And again, that's hard to argue with when it's coming from the Supreme Court. But John, thank you for your call. I got to take
a
break now.
I'm going to call you back one of these days, and I'm really going to give you a run for it, okay?
That is absolutely fine. And don't forget to vote for me. Okay. Thanks, John.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Give us a call here, 981-7200. Let's have a nice discussion, a nice civilized discussion about Donald Trump's executive order or any legal questions you might have. It's Karen Conti in for Brian Noonan, 981-7200. You're listening to WGN. I've been around Chicago for about 30 years and radio about 25 years, and I try to keep my comments on the legal system and legal questions from callers. If you have any comments about the Donald Trump executive order or any of the lawsuits that are going on right now, please give us a call, 312-981-7200, or if you have any legal question at all, I'll try to get to that too. I have a couple of calls, actually text. I'm getting all fired up, says a 847 texter. Constitutional rights are a privilege, not a right. The courts have no say in what the president does. Okay, and, you know, I love when people say those things, because I hope that I can set you right on that. A constitutional right is a right. It's not a privilege. It's a right. It's a God-given right, according to the framers, if you're going to invoke our Lord. But these are rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the rights that have been given to us inherently. These are not given to us by a government that can be taken away. And if you read the Constitution and you read all of these documents and you read the documents that explain them, you will understand that they are not a privilege. Due process? Not a privilege. It's a right. First Amendment, right to free speech? It's not a privilege. It is our right. So we must take them seriously. They're not legal loopholes. They are what this country is based upon. And frankly, I think a lot of people in this country don't appreciate our freedoms and appreciate our rights, because generally they are not taken away from us. Usually they are enforced, and our government and our legislators and our executive branch honors those rights and acknowledges them. So you're absolutely wrong about that. I have to say that. And the issue is that the president can do whatever it wants and the courts don't have a say in it. That's not true either, because that's what we call our checks and balances. That means our legislator can make a rule and our court can say that's unconstitutional. Our president can order things and the courts can have the ultimate say saying it's unconstitutional. So on both those, I would say you're incorrect. I don't want to disparage you, but I think it's something that you should read about and understand and appreciate, because these are very, very, very important rights. Let's see. I'm going to go to, I believe it's Tracy. Hi, Tracy. Welcome to WGN. How are you?
Okay. Great, Karen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. My sister had a defibrillator installed in her heart, by her heart, several years ago. And they are doing a recall on the defibrillators, and I saw a commercial on TV. And I called these attorneys that they said to call, and I got the papers. But They're asking for, they would take 40% of what they recover plus expenses. And they don't want to tell me, like, what their hourly rate would be or what other kind of filing fee expenses there would be. So I guess my question to you is, how legitimate are these attorneys that are on TV when they advertise these kind of claims?
That's a good question, Tracy. Generally speaking, first of all, I can't say, because I don't know this particular lawsuit and I don't know these particular lawyers, but this is what we call a class action suit, as I'm sure you're aware. And what happens is one or, you know, a couple of law firms will get together and they will have the right to bring a lawsuit that brings in all of the people that might be adversely affected by something that might be negligent. So all of the cases will go into this courtroom. There could be thousands of them. There probably are. And you're asking the question of the hourly rate. The hourly rate is probably not going to be very relevant to you, because if they take 40% of what you're entitled to, let's just say that you have to have surgery and your surgery was $20,000 and you're entitled to $50,000. They're going to take 40% of that. But in addition, all of the expenses for the litigation will probably be split up among all of the other plaintiffs. Now, that could be filing fees, which could be, you know, substantial. There could be mailing costs, because all the mail has to go out to all the class participants. So there might be expenses. You know, it's hard to really quantify what that might be. But let me just tell you this. Ultimately, when the class action lawsuit is settled, and most of them are settled, the judge has to approve it. And the judge is very diligent in these cases of approving what each person gets, what the expenses are, and what the fees are. And if they're not reasonable, the judge can knock them down. So you are protected to some extent if there's a class action and you're worried about whether or not the lawyers, you know, are taking too much. So I would say you're protected. The only question is, you know, I don't know what your damages are, and I don't know what the lawyers are going to ask for you from you for proof of that.
Okay. So they're not doing it as a class action. They would all be filed individually, they told me.
Okay. Well, then the expenses won't be broken up. But, again, I think you can probably try to call them or write them, send them an email and ask what kind of filing fees that they expect. They may or may not get back to you. But if they're your lawyer, they should. Good luck to you, Tracy. I hope that works out for you. We're taking your calls, 981-7200. I'm Karen Conti in for Brian Noonan on WGN. I don't know if anyone saw Saturday Night Live, but boy, that was it was very funny. And even if you're a Trump supporter or not a Trump supporter, I still think it was funny. It was in good humor. Anyway, you know, I guess I wanted to talk just a little bit. It's Karen Conti in for Brian Noonan, by the way. 981-7200 if you have comments about anything going on in Trump world or any legal questions you might have. 981-7200. I guess I wanted to weigh in a little bit on some of the comments that Donald Trump, President Trump, has made about the judges. And listen, I think that we should say, most people should say whatever they want. I think that if you have an opinion on something, there's no reason that you shouldn't generally say it. And as a lawyer, as a practicing lawyer for 30 years, I've had some really bad rulings. I've had bad rulings from juries. I've had bad rulings from judges. And have I said things in private? Have I said things to people like, gosh, they screwed up, or they weren't prepared, or they didn't get it? But most of the time, I do think that judges try their best. I do think that judges try to understand, they try to prepare, they try to do what's best, they try to be impartial, and they have to live with their decisions. I think they understand that what they do affects people generally, and I think juries really try hard. I think that I have never in my life disparaged a jury to anyone other than maybe a close companion, because I think juries, for the most part, try to do their best. You know, they're doing it for no money, $30 a day or whatever the going rate is. And so I guess I just feel that some of these comments that Donald Trump has made in the last week, calling the Washington judge a so-called judge whose decision was ridiculous, if something happens, blame him, you know, a bad high school student could have done better, if they would just be able to read and do what's right, those kinds of things. I think that, first of all, you know, he is a role model. He is the president of our country, and he is showing a lack of respect for a branch of government. And you know, again, he could have his opinions, and I know that a lot of presidents over the years, including Franklin Roosevelt, including Barack Obama, and many others, have not been pleased with some of the rulings. I remember one of the George Bushes made some comment saying, we respect the Supreme Court's opinion, but don't expect us to like it. And, you know, all of those things can be said in a way that doesn't diminish the importance of judicial review of what the president and what the legislators are doing. It's part of the process. And, you know, you look, you know, to yourself, even when I get a bad ruling and I don't think the judge got it right, I will blame myself and I'll say I wasn't clear enough. I didn't make my point well enough. I didn't draft my brief well enough. And maybe I'll do it better next time so we get it right so I can get the judge to see my side. And so I guess I really don't like these comments that President Trump is making in the public about judges who are really trying to do their job. Again, you don't have to agree with them. And I'm looking at all my callers and texters. You know, I'm in the minority. I think most people, wanted that to be upheld and wanted the law to be upheld. But again, it's a different thing to say something disparaging about a judge. And then the final thing is it's not helping his game. It's not helping it at all. I have said this over and over again to my clients. You know, when you're sitting in the barber chair, the worst time to get the barber mad at you is when he has the scissors in his hand, right? You don't want to disparage somebody who's going to be making an important decision. Not that judges are going to listen to that and say, okay, I'm just going to rule against you because I don't like you. But it affects their whole attitude and demeanor toward the whole issue. I tell my clients, be nice, be civilized, be respectful, you know, dress up and go to court, show respect for the court. This is a very formal place. You know, if you have a problem with something, I don't want you slamming doors and walking out of here. We are going to conduct ourselves like big people. And I just think this whole, the comments are petty and just not respectful of the whole system. I don't know if anyone agrees with me. If you agree or disagree, 981-7200, 981-7200. Let's see what we have on our text. We have 847. He has the ultimate power to protect us, and he will win this even if he chooses to. I hope he writes another much more entailed order. We need to keep these. We need to keep these. Yeah, and I think that's right. I think if he really wants to protect our country, there's a way to do it, and there was a way to draft this with the right legal terms in it and with the right motivations. We have 630 area code. Who is checking the judiciary? How do we start the process of impeaching these judges? Clearly, they have overstepped their authority. Again, it's like federal judges are appointed for life. Federal judges are appointed by presidents and approved by the Senate. These people are in there for life. The majority of them are very conservative human beings. Whether they're appointed by Barack Obama or whoever they're appointed by, they are bound to follow the law. To talk about impeaching a judge because you don't like their opinion, I find that to be a conclusion that we shouldn't be reaching. You know, again, the checks and balances are very, very important. And just because a judge does something you don't like, why don't you all read this order? Read the opinion. Some of it is going to be a little hard to understand just because it's a lot of case citation and some things that are not within the public, you know, knowledge. But read it and read how much they put into it. Read how they said, if this if this executive order were so important to the national security, why couldn't the government come up with any good reason why these seven countries were the seven countries? And why didn't we include some of the other countries that did have terrorist activity? The court wanted to get that information, and the government just didn't provide them with information, and they could have done it secretly under seal if it had security ramifications. So if you read it, you'll understand that the judges were trying to see if they could find it to be constitutional or that it might be constitutional, and they considered all aspects of it before ruling. Again, I'm going to stick with my position, but I know that I'm going to get some people to disagree with me on that. I think we have a legal question from Connie down in Bloomington Normal. Hi, Connie. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I put my house on the market a week ago, and I've been dealing with a realtor that I feel like is not doing his job, and I'm not happy about it. I was wondering, like, whenever there's a showing, he just texts me, and then when the people come and look at the house, he never contacts me to see how things went. Another thing is there's this virtual tour that I asked him to set up for me, and I emailed him that a question if he could do that for me, and he never responded. And
so you're not pleased with your realtor. Are you going to ask me if you can get rid of him and get somebody else?
Yeah, after I sign the contract, can I? It's been a week. Can I find somebody new that I can
yes,
work back with?
Yes, you can. In fact, why don't you read very carefully your sales agreement, your listing agreement with your contract with your realtor. There's usually a provision that says that you can terminate services. Sometimes there's a fight if there's some kind of offer in the works. There might be some idea that if that house sells to that person that was that made the offer during the time the realtor was your realtor, that he might have some claim to some of the proceeds. But if there's no offer pending, the sales contract will generally, I can't remember the exact language, but it'll generally allow you to terminate him. You should do it in writing via email, and you don't need to give a reason, and they should just move on and get a new realtor. There's plenty of them out there, and there's no excuse for realtors who are not communicating. I feel the same way with lawyers. Lawyers sometimes don't communicate. They go to court, they don't talk to their clients, and clients don't hear from them for months at a time. There's no excuse for that. There are plenty of good lawyers and realtors out there who can communicate with you. Okay?
Okay, so just send them an email and consider it terminated, right?
That's right. That's all you need to do. No hard feelings.
Okay.
All right? Good luck, Connie.
Thank you.
Good luck selling your house. You're listening to WGN 981-7200, 981-7200. I had a texter from the 630 who texted and said he's doing some renovation work, and he chose the contractor with the lowest bid. And when the work was done, he was charged $1,600 more than the bid. Is that legal? The answer is no. And if the bid was for a job and the job entailed the same thing that he actually did, then he needs to stick by the contract. The bid is actually, once accepted by you, is a binding contract, and he can't charge you more. Now, what happens a lot of times is during construction, you might say, oh, I need something extra done. Can you do this little bit of tiling, or can you give me an upgrade on this material? In which case, that changes the contract, and then the contractor would be entitled to some extra money. But if it's exactly what he said he was going to do and he bid it in writing and you accepted it, then he should not charge you $1,600 more for it. Hope that answers your question. We're going to be continuing to take legal questions. If for some reason you don't get through, and I always give my phone number out in case you want to reach me after the show is over, call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me so you can give me the facts, you can give me what happened, you can give me what county you're in. It's K Conti, that's KConti, at kcontilaw.com. You're listening to WGN. I'm Karen Conti. Let's go to Jenny in Chicago. Hi, Jenny. It's Karen Conti. Welcome to WGN. Do you have a legal question?
Well, I'll try to make it intelligible. What are the laws about disclosing the name, publishing the name of somebody who allegedly molested a kid.
Okay. Was there a criminal action about this?
It's a person who didn't get caught.
Okay. Well, who would publish that information?
Well, any media.
Okay. Now, so there's an adult who allegedly molested a child, and you're wondering why the media didn't say anything, or you're wondering if they can say something?
Yeah.
You know, my experience with this, I have to say, Jenny, is that the media doesn't really like to report things unless there's a criminal charge or a civil lawsuit, because when they have those two things, they have reason to report on them, and they can say, if ever sued, hey, listen, I'm just reporting on something that was filed by the prosecutor or filed by a lawyer. And therefore, the media is protected from a standpoint of defamation and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they generally don't do that unless there is a lawsuit or a charge. It's not a law. It's more like just their whole protocol in order to protect themselves civilly. Does that answer your question?
I think it does.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you, Jenny. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to William. William, welcome to WGN. You have a legal question.
Yes. When Barack Obama was making any executive order, and by the way that executive orders are made, he has the lowest count of making any executive order. I think it was around 4. Everybody else had 20 or 30. But the point is, what I'm trying to find out is that the legality of the executive power that a president has when making an order, don't he have to follow the Constitution for legality and relevance to the Constitution on giving an executive order? And you can't just throw it out there simply saying, I'm protecting security and all that. That is not going to work. And those court justices, when they on the court bench, like you said, they're there for life. So they're not humble to any party whatsoever. They go by the constitutional law. That's why when Roberts, the Chief Justice, came out of there and went against Republicans and said that it was legal on the Affordable Care Act that was presented by Barack Obama.
William, you make a couple of good points here, and I'm going to just bullet point what you said.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the executive orders, right. You're absolutely right. It's not the president can't just do anything with an executive order. We're not going to follow the Constitution. We're not going to follow the laws. We're just going to just do something. No, that's checks and balances. The president can issue executive orders under certain circumstances to protect national security, immigration, all those things, and other things. Clearly, he can do that, but he still has to be within the parameters of the Constitution, all the due process, First Amendment, et cetera. So you're absolutely right. There, it's not like it's a wild authority to do something outside of what we as a country have stood for 200 and something years, right? So you're right about that. And then I think you asked another question. What was the second part of that was, I forgot what
I had said that Chief Justice Roberts.
Oh, yes, when Roberts went the other way.
When he ruled in favor of the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, and you know
what? First of all, one more question. I mean, to follow, you can say them both together. But when they're on that repeal, they want to repeal Obamacare. But yet, he doesn't have nothing to replace that. And you got to have something to replace it. And it's got to be constitutional, I think, in order to overturn that.
Okay. I'm going to just drop you off here, and you can listen to the radio. First of all, the Obamacare can be taken away, and there doesn't need to be anything in place. Now, would that be a bad thing? I don't really know. My guess would be it'd be really bad. And my guess would be is that it's probably best that we have something at least to replace it, or at least to make it an orderly situation, so people are not left with no hospitalization. I really don't have an opinion on that, but he certainly could do that, and the legislature can certainly take action to do that. But when you said about Justice Roberts and how Roberts kind of came down on the side in favor of Obamacare, I think that just goes to show you, it's again, do judges come with preconceived notions? Do judges come from certain backgrounds more predisposed to be liberal or conservative? Yes, but they are so tied to precedent and what has been done before. I mean, even if a justice doesn't believe that abortion is right, there is court precedent, like Roe versus Wade, that says that women has a right to an abortion. Now we have gay rights being made into a human right. So in order to overturn that, it's going to be very difficult because of case precedent. And again, people are political. Judges are political. Judges have a very, strong feelings about things, but they're also obligated and sworn to basically follow the Constitution and follow precedent. Let's see if we can get Carol in Indiana. Hi, Carol. We just have a few minutes here. Welcome to WGN.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. What I wanted to know, and maybe you can tell me, is there a legal way that the people of this country can start a recall or an impeachment, call for an impeachment of Trump?
There's no way for the people to impeach Trump. The way that impeachment gets done is through the legislature, and there is an impeachment process, and then it goes to the Senate for basically a trial on the issue of whether there's a conviction and a removal from office. That's the way it's done. But, you know, the people of the United States, if they feel strongly about that, would have to call and write their congresspeople and urge them to make those, make those claims and to accuse them of high crimes and misdemeanors, which is what you have to accuse a president of in order to impeach him. So there's no direct way for the people of the United States to do that. Mm-hmm. But thank you for your call.
Through the legislature.
That's right.
Yes. But does there have to be a majority?
Yes, when there's an impeachment, there is a majority, and then there's a requisite number of senatorial votes that need to be. As I'm sitting here, I don't remember exactly if it's half or majority or three quarters, but yes, there's a requisite mm-hmm. amount of votes that need to be issued. Okay, we
gotta run.
But thank you, Carol. You're listening to WGN AM 720 with Karen Conti.